Welcome to Tzareti Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we will be studying Sefer Yeshayahu, Perek 6. In the last perek, Yeshayahu tried to convince the people to improve, first by delivering an allegorical poem about a vineyard to encourage self-reflection, and then by sharing explicit words of critique focused on their immoral exploitation of the vulnerable, their excessive materialistic indulgences, and their resistance to change. The harsh critique was followed by descriptions of exile, which is the punishment for their behavior. This parak is a change from the previous prakim, as it centers around an actual event in the life of Yeshayahu. The next seven nevuos follow along this pattern. Rather than speaking in general terms of general sin, in the next seven prakim, Yeshayahu will look at actual events which are an example of the sin and redemption described in the previous prakim. Parak 6 is a unique nevuah which contains a vision called the Maaseh Merkava. The Maaseh Merkava is only found here and in the beginning of Sefer Yechezkel. The Maaseh Merkava literally means the story of the chariots. It is a depiction of the spiritual means by which Hashem causes change in the physical world and how sin causes Hashem's influence to be removed from the world. The Mishnah in Chagigah says that one may not teach the Maaseh Merkava to more than one student at a time. There are many esoteric and deep ideas contained in the study of these words that must be reserved only for the most worthy and scholarly. In our study, we will only learn the most superficial understanding of what the parak means. Yechezkel, in the first parak of his sefer, also has a vision of Hashem's Merkava. The descriptions there are more elaborate than what Yeshayahu describes here. Yeshayahu was accustomed to seeing the glory of Hashem as he was in Yerushalayim, so what he described is a very cursory, as it is part of his regular life. Yechezkel, who lived in Bavel in exile during the time immediately preceding the temple's destruction, was unaccustomed to Hashem's presence being so evident, and so his description is far more detailed, as if he's seeing it for the first time, so it makes a much better impression on him. The Malbim says that Yeshayahu and Yechezkel could not have seen Hashem, as is described in this parak, as the infinitely divine is above any human being's perception. What they are trying to describe with finite words is their mind's perception and interpretation of how Hashem acts, which is then filtered so it can be communicated to us. According to most Mefarshim, this parak is not in its chronological order. It is Yeshayahu's first nevuah. Torah texts are not chronological, but are ordered thematically. The first five prakim introduced the main themes of the sefer, that of action and consequence. This parak describes how Yeshayahu's mission began. King Uzziahu was a righteous leader who strengthened his kingdom's religiosity, economy, and security. He thought that he should combine the religious and political functions of the nation by offering the Ketores himself, which was a rite reserved for a Kohen. When he tried to perform this ritual, he was immediately stricken with Tzara'as, which forced him to leave Yerushalayim as he was in a perpetual state of impurity. Tzara'as is comparable to death, which is why the parak begins, Pasuk 1, Bishnas Mos HaMelech Uzziahu, in the year that the king Uzziahu died. When Uzziahu brought Ketores, he got Tzara'as, and his son Yosam took over the actual management of the kingdom until Uzziahu died. This event marked the beginning of the end of Malchus Yehuda. It would be many years, close to two centuries, before the final destruction of the temple, but Uzziahu's Tzara'as marked a turning point from which the nation never recovered. Yeshayahu describes Hashem, Yoshev al Kisei Ram Venisa, as sitting on a high and raised throne. The fact that Hashem is sitting symbolized that as king, he is continuously present and involved in this world. Vishulav Mleim Esahechal. His hem fills the temple. The border of Hashem's throne enters the temple. This means that Hashem's influence on the world comes to the Mikdash and then spreads from there to the entire physical world. Only Hashem's hem is in the temple, meaning that Hashem is removed from the world and cannot be impacted by it. But there is still some component which is described in Yechezkel which interacts with this world. The place of connection between heaven and earth is the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem does not carry out his will in this world on his own. He has Malachim, which we translate as angels often, whose mission is to implement his decisions. These Malachim have different names depending on their mission and proximity to the Kisei HaKavod, the heavenly throne. Our Pasuk calls the angels Yeshayahu sees Srafim. He describes them as having six wings. Pasuk 2, Bishtayim yechaseh panav, ubishtayim yechaseh raglav, ubishtayim yofef. With two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he would fly. The Melachim covered their face so as not to see the Shechina. They covered their feet out of modesty, standing before Hashem, and the two wings allowed them to fly to execute their mission. In Yechezkel's time, the Melachim only have four wings, because at that point they can no longer carry out the mission with as much efficiency, since Hashem's presence is removed from the world. Yeshayahu overhears the conversation of the Melachim before the judgment of Uzziyahu takes place. Pasuk 3, Vekara ze el ze, and one called to another. We reference this conversation in the Birchos Kriyas Shema we say each morning. In our tefillah, we say that they ask permission from each other out of fear. Rashi explains that the Melachim must coordinate their praise of Hashem, because if any individual Malach praises Hashem, they would be consumed, because the praise of Hashem is an act holier than any Malach can handle. They say, Kadosh, 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 Hatzem, Shem Tzvakos. Holy, holy, holy is Hashem Tzvakos. Hashem, who is the master of all powers, is in a different class of holiness than anything of this world, different in holiness from the Melachim, different in holiness from the upper worlds, and different from anything in our world. Only Hashem is not bound by a time or a body and transcends all creations. Melo chol ha'aretz kvodo. The whole world which Hashem created is filled with His honor. The Das Sofrim adds that although Hashem is separate, He allows elements of His holiness to permeate every aspect of creation. The judgment of Uzziyahu is taking place, and Yeshayahu sees the doorposts of the Beis HaMikdash shake as there was a massive earthquake in Israel, and simultaneously, the Beis HaMikdash fills with smoke. When Uzziyahu tried to bring Ketores, Chazal say a debate raged in heaven. During the time of Moshe, another group of men tried to usurp the role of the Kohanim and wanted to bring Ketores. Korach wanted to be a Kohen, and he was swallowed by the earth. 250 men sided with him and tried to bring Ketores, and they were burned. The Melachim were debating which was the appropriate punishment for Uzziyahu, which is why Yeshayahu saw both an earthquake and a fire in the Beis HaMikdash. When Yeshayahu sees his vision of the Melachim and the smoke, he is frightened and exclaims, Pasuk 5, V'omar, and I said, Oili ki nidmesi, woe is me. The word nidmesi is a vague word, which can mean, for I am destroyed, or because I was silent. Yeshayahu is seeing the Shechina, which Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able to look at. He assumes, like Manoach, Shimshon's father, that he would die because his body was not worthy of such a spiritual experience. He also did not participate in the Kedusha of the Melachim because he was unsure if he could. He was hesitant if that was the correct decision. His rationale was, Ki ish tmei sefasayim anochi, because I am in a man of unclean lips. He felt unworthy of adding to the declaration of the angels. And then he adds, Ubesoch am tmei sefasayim anochi yoshev, and I dwell among a nation of unclean lips. Yeshayahu was correct to be self-critical. However, Hashem did not approve of his blanket criticism of the Jewish people. At the end of his life, Yeshayahu's grandson Menashe hunts him down to kill him. Yeshayahu hides himself as a tree. Menashe started stabbing the tree, hoping to harm his grandfather. When the sword reached the mouth of Yeshayahu, he was killed as a punishment for speaking negatively against the whole nation. This is the balance the Navi must always make. He is meant to deliver the words of Nevuah to help the nation improve, but he must always be the strongest advocate for his nation when speaking to Hashem or to himself. Next in the perek, we learn that Yeshayahu stands there frozen, unsure of what will happen. A malach flies toward him, bringing with him a hot coal from the Mizbeach that the angel holds with tongs and then touches Yeshayahu on the lips. The malach states, Pasuk 7, Bisar avonecha bechatascha tuchupar. Your sin is taken away and your sin atoned. The coal was the punishment to purify the sin of Lashon Hara against the nation so that Yeshayahu can now say Nevuah. Rav Schwab points out that the Malach needed tongs to touch the coal, yet Yeshayahu was not harmed by the coal touching his lips. The message is that man, with his free will, is more powerful than even the Malachim. When man chooses to speak correctly, his words are holier than the Malachim singing praises to Hashem. Once this punishment has been delivered, Yeshayahu hears Hashem speaking as if Hashem is consulting the Seraphim about who would be the appropriate messenger to give Musar to Bnei Israel. Chazal say that he mentions what a hard job this is, as other Nevi'im are mocked and hurt when they deliver their Nevuos. Pasuk 8, Es mi eshlach umi yelech lanu? Who is qualified that I can send? Who is going to want to go for us? The Das Sofrim says that many Nevi'im heard this call, but only Yeshayahu volunteers, which makes his nevuah of a different stature and nature than the other Nevi'im. The first message Hashem says is Pasuk 9, Shimu Shamoa v'al tavinu, Uru ra'o v'al teda'u. They hear but do not understand, they see but do not know. The nation will not care about the nevuah. They have a deep knowledge of Hashem from the miracles they see regularly. The reason that they will ignore all their Musar is because, Pasuk 10, Hashmein Lev Ha'am Hazeh, the nation as a whole has a fattened heart. There may be individuals who have their priorities straight, but most of the nation does not. The reigns of Uzziyahu and Yosam were very affluent, and most shifted their lifestyles based on that wealth and minimized their spiritual pursuits. They chose not to notice how they were changing and the impact on their lifestyle. This was the work of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara makes sure that people are distracted and complacent, so they won't reflect on what they are doing, because otherwise, ulevavo yavin v'shav v'rafalo. If his heart would actually understand, he would do tshuva and be healed. Yeshayahu is horrified by what he is seeing. Pasuk 11, he asks Hashem, Ad Masai Hashem, how long Hashem? How long would this go on that they will not change? Are you going to allow them to ruin themselves without intervention? Hashem's answer is painful. Ad asher im sha'u arim me'ein yoshev, uvatim me'ein adam, v'adama tisha'esh mama. Until the cities will be waste without inhabitants, and houses without man, and the land become utterly waste. The Das Sofrim says as long as they have a nation, an army, and a land that they can rely on, they will never be forced to make any changes. Even when the nation hears this, it still doesn't bother them. They figure, how big of a deal could this be? If they need to, they'll change neighborhoods. Yeshayahu warns them that this is not just going to be a small slap on the wrist. Pasuk 12, V'richa kashem es ha'adam, and Hashem will move the men far away. The 10 Shvatim will be exiled to Ashur. Yehuda and Binyamin will go to Bavel. V'raba ha'azuva b'karef ha'aretz, and the forsaken places will be many in the midst of the lands. They are not just going to Damascus, will they be able to get home quickly and easily. When Bnei Israel go into Galus, the land will be abandoned for a long time. Yeshayahu concludes with a final prediction. Pasuk 13, V'bo od ba asiriya v'shava v'haysa l'va'er. There will yet be a tenth, and then it will be eaten up again. After Uzziyahu, there will be another 10 kings in total until the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That generation is compared to two trees, a terebinth and an oak, ka'ela v'cha'alon. In the autumn, the trees slowly lose their leaves until the tree is bare. This is what it will be like for the next generations. Every generation will lose land and population until only the trunk will remain that still has the Zera Kodesh Matzavta, with holy seed will be in the trunk. The trunk, the remainder of the house of David, will not be destroyed, and from that trunk will grow hope for the future. This parak was a sobering parak which described the beginning of Yeshayahu's first nevuah when Uzziyahu offered Ketores, got Saras, and caused an earthquake. Yeshayahu sees the Masa Merkava, Hashem's Shekhinah in the Mikdash with the Malachim. A Malach touches his lips to purify him for his mission. Yeshayahu accepts Hashem's mission to deliver the negative nevuos, even though Hashem warns him that his nevuos will not be well received. The people are too distracted by materialism to pay attention. Eventually, the nation will be exiled, and from the destruction will come the rebuilding. There are a few lessons here in this parak. First, Yeshayahu is faulted for saying a blanket negative statement about the Jewish people. Criticizing oneself and criticizing others is not the same. Hashem defends anyone who attacks the Jewish people. He promised Avraham that those who bless his children will be blessed, and those who curse his children will be cursed. Hashem instructs the Nevi'im what to say about the Jewish people to improve them. Otherwise, they need to take care, as these are the children of Avraham. Another lesson for us is how Yeshayahu volunteers for his mission. No other Navi ever acted this way. Even Moshe and Yirmiyahu protested when they were chosen for their role. Yeshayahu recognizes that there are pitfalls of the job, but chose to do it anyway because he wanted to serve Hashem where he was necessary. He is a role model of how we should act when we have a choice to get involved with something that may feel overwhelming or challenging. We should look to Yeshayahu and ignore how it will impact us, and instead focus on whether we are necessary. I heard from Rabbi Hauer an anecdote about this idea. He once was discussing with Rabbi Naftali Neuberger from Neri Yisrael how Rabbi Neuberger chose what causes to get involved with. Sometimes he would make phone calls for a widow, other times he would be talking to senators, and sometimes he would make phone calls to the widow and tell others to call the senators. Rabbi Neuberger responded that he would look at a job and would only do those jobs that someone else could not do. Sometimes the jobs he had to do were far less glamorous, but his criteria was the same as Yeshayahu. The reward for this attitude is immense. In Tana Debe Eliyahu, it recounts a story of a student who asked his Rebbe how come Yeshayahu got all the positive nevuos compared to the other Nevi'im. The Rebbe answers, because Yeshayahu accepted his mission with simcha, with enthusiasm, even though it wasn't a great job. He got to say all the positive nevuos because it didn't shrink away from saying the bad ones that when it was hard. That is our job, to do the hard work and know the benefits of being on Hashem's team. Thank you for learning together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Barbara Atlas, Bracha Bas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.